WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Nigerian writer Wole Soyinka, the first African to win the Nobel Prize for Literature, was forced into exile 1 year and 8 months ago. Not long after he fled, dissident writer Ken Sarawiwa was executed along with eight other activists. The dictator of Nigeria, General Sani Abacha, seized power in 1993, shortly after a democratic election was annulled by Abacha's predecessor. The winner of that election, Moshood Abiola, is now a political prisoner. Wole Soyinka is calling for international sanctions against the dictatorship. He says he's been traveling a lot since going into exile, but he spent much of the past few months in the United States. In October, the Brooklyn Academy of Music will present his latest play, The Beatification of Area Boy. Soyinka also has a new book called The Open Sore of a Continent. I asked him how he knew it was time to flee Nigeria.
One of the ways one survives under a brutal dictatorship, such as Abacha's, is by ensuring that one keeps some kind of information line, even within the heart or the core of the regime itself. I was going to say the heart, but I don't think this regime has any heart. And this includes the secret services, the military, civil servants, and we get a lot of information that way. Even up till this moment, I can almost tell you what Abacha is planning for his October 1st speech. That's the Independence Day celebrations in Nigeria.
What is he planning?
Well, he's planning to make some token releases of some prisoners in order to appease the international community, perhaps. In particular, the Commonwealth countries who've given him all sorts of wishy-washy deadlines. And so he'll release a few prisoners. He's not going to release the main person, the president-elect of Nigeria. No, he's going to hold out for some stiffer bargaining, some concessions from the Commonwealth and from the international community. And then he's going to announce that he's embarked on a cleansing project, you know, corruption and so on and so forth. We know pretty well the substance of what Abacha is going to announce in October.
So you're saying that there are dissidents in the military who leak information?
Yes, who pass on information within the military, within the secret services, yes. And many of us, I must say, depend very much on them for our survival. Even outside here, I can tell you that.
Are you in danger outside of Nigeria?
I'm afraid so, yes. Not just myself. A number of other activists, democracy activists, in danger outside.
Are you living in semi-hiding, not telling people where you sleep and so on?
That is true, yes. This is I keep my residential address secret.
Does having a Nobel Prize protect you in any way?
No, I'm afraid not. Now, in general, it is true that winning the Nobel Prize protects writers, some writers, scientists, and so on in certain countries. But we have a very strange phenomenon in Nigeria, and unfortunately, the large part of the world is not yet aware of this fact. This is somebody who really thrives at delivering shocks to the civilized world.
Who, the General Abacha, the dictator?
General Abacha, yes, yes, that's his mentality. He's a psychopath, and he loves humiliating even his fellow African heads of states. Look at the way he's been treating Nelson Mandela, for instance, somebody whom we all revere. He's the icon of African self-worth, self-being, recognition, sense of independence, and sense of racial worth. And the insults which Abacha has been casting at Abacha is something which just appalls.
What has he said about Nelson Mandela?
Nelson Mandela, Both he directly and his Minister of Information at one time, his Foreign Affairs Minister, Ikime, when Nelson Mandela was taking a principled stand against him, he made his foreign minister say that Nelson's long imprisonment had addled his brain, something like that. Now, for any African leader to say that about Nelson Mandela, just it shows there's nothing else to be said. So for somebody like Abacha, nothing would give him the greater pleasure than to have the privilege of hanging, of saying to the world, yes, I've hanged a Nobel Prize winner, I've had him shot or executed, the same way as he executed the environmental activist and writer Ken Saro-Wiwa, hanged him despite all the protestations of the world after a secret trial, which everybody admits, at least outside Abacha's caucus and apologists, was one of the greatest travesties of justice ever committed, you know, in the contemporary world.
The New York Times had an editorial this week urging the United States to impose sanctions on Nigeria, to take a harder stand against the dictatorship. I was wondering if you were recently at an editorial meeting with the New York Times.
No, I haven't spoken to the New York Times in ages. But I applaud that stand. And let me urge that there is really no option if, in the end, the civilized world everywhere, you know, across the entire globe, is not going to feel ashamed of its inertia and its attitude of compromise over this issue. Canada, let me single out Canada in particular as one of the principled countries over this issue. Canada has never wavered in recognition of the fact that a monster has been loosened upon the world. Canada has got sick of the pussyfooting of the Commonwealth countries and has decided to take unilateral action against Nigeria. The result is that Nigeria has been forced to close down its mission in Canada as a kind of protest, you know, the usual empty-headed, you know, gesture of bravado. But Canada and one or two other Commonwealth countries, Australia, New Zealand, not quite as strong as Canada, I mean, these are principled directions.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Nobel Prize-winning writer Wole Soyinka, and he's been living in exile from Nigeria for close to 2 years. He has a new book called The Open Sore of a Continent, a personal narrative of the Nigerian crisis, and his play The Beatification of Area Boy will be performed next month at the Brooklyn Academy of Music. Ken Saro-Wiwa was hanged last year for being a dissident and for protesting oil interests in the country and their pollution of land and water there. He was a playwright. Were you a friend of his?
Yes, he was. We're not all that close. We sort of created in different orbits and so on. But he was the president of my National Union of Writers for 2 years. We became, you know, I got to know him very well, especially since he became involved in the Ogoni struggle. And to have accused Ken Saro-Wiwa of being of complicity in the murders of some local chiefs of his own people is one of the most grotesque charges that could ever be filed against somebody like Ken Saro-Wiwa. It's just preposterous.
Did his hanging really hit you hard because here was a fellow writer being hung?
Hard. I was traumatized for quite a number of days. What made it particularly bad for me was that I had been in Auckland. Remember that his hanging took place virtually on the eve of the Commonwealth Heads of State's conference. And I traveled there on my way to Japan to emphasize, to try and get these heads of states to understand that we know Abacha, they do not. That was the message. I said, he will hang this man and his colleagues, nine of them altogether. He will hang them unless you send a message and back it up with some kind of action which makes Abacha understand that he means business. I spoke to heads of states, foreign ministers, and I left. By the time I left, something happened. Some communication came from home which made me convinced that Ken and his companions were doomed. So I left, in fact, before the conference actually started. I'd done all I could, and I was in Tokyo when the news came. And as I said, I was just traumatized for at least 3 days.
Well, Ashayenka is my guest, Nobel Prize-winning writer. He's been living in exile from Nigeria for close to 2 years. Let's take a short break, and then we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Air. Back with Wole Soyinka, Nobel Prize-winning writer from Nigeria who's been living in exile from his country for close to 2 years. He has a new book called The Open Sore of a Continent, a personal narrative of the Nigerian crisis. And his play, The Beatification of Area Boy, will be performed in early October at the Brooklyn Academy of Music. In your new extended essay, The Open Sore of a Continent, a personal narrative of the Nigerian crisis, you write that you were in the middle of a riot in June of 1993. This is a riot against a previous dictator, Babangida.
Babangida, yes.
And you write, during the most violent day of the anti-Babangida riots, I was trapped within the tumult of thousands that submerged my car, sat, drummed, or danced on it. Voices would ring out with shouts, lead us out of this mess called Nigeria. We can make it on our own. Would you tell us what it was like to be in the middle of a riot against this dictator, and how did you end up in the middle of it?
What happened was I was flying back home, and the tension at home was such that Air France refused to fly into Lagos. Now, I was determined to get back in time, you know, because the struggle had begun to oust Babangida. I left the country just about a few weeks before. I hadn't planned for less than a few weeks before. I hadn't planned to be out, you know, that long. And then Air France said, no, they were going to overfly Nigeria and fly to Cotonou, that's the Republic of Benin. I said, okay, I'll fly to Benin, and then I'll go by public transport, you know, by a road to Nigeria. And so that's what I did. And that's how I ended up right in the middle of the most violent day of the entire anti-Babangida riot. And they recognized me at once, and then...
When you say they, do you mean the rioters or the police?
Well, I should really call them demonstrators, because they were not rioters.
Right, the demonstrators,
yes.
And what sparked this uprising?
Oh, it was the annulment of the elections. The elections of June 12, 1993, which were considered by the international community, by observers everywhere, by even the agencies of Babangida's government, as the freest and fairest ever conducted in Nigeria.
How did this demonstration become a riot?
It became a riot when the police and the MOPO, that's the mobile police, usually called Kill and Go, and the military, under the direct orders of Abacha, this very dictator who's there, he was number two, when they began to open fire on the demonstrators. And then there was panic and, of course, reprisals here and there. And Abacha personally led, and this I confirm, and I've said it over and over again, other journalists who were present have said it, this regime cannot deny it. Abacha, who's number two, personally led in his armored car, you know, his bulletproof car, led detachments of soldiers and ordered them to open fire on the demonstrators.
What did you do when you realized that the police were opening fire on the demonstrators?
Well, it's a pretty weird situation. The first thing, of course, was you couldn't talk because everybody, you know, ran for cover. But what I did do, and of course they would regroup, reassemble, and so on and so forth, and take on the soldiers and the police here and there. But at night, I received, as darkness fell, I received information that Abacha's people, because the demonstrators were determined to stay the whole night. They were going to stay by their fires, their roadblocks, and so on. And I received information that there was going to be a blitz during the night. So I was responsible in the Ipaja sector, that's in Lagos, towards Abeokuta, Ota, Agege. I then went around and told them to disperse. I said, people were going to come at night and shoot them using the cover of darkness, arrest some, you know, roll over others. And I pleaded with them to go home, and fortunately they did. I said, listen, go home and come back if you wish in the daytime, but listen to the radio, listen to what your leaders are telling you, but don't stay out during the night, because we learned what they planned to do to the demonstrators during the night.
Did they disperse after that?
They dispersed. They dispersed and regrouped the following morning. They dispersed.
In your new extended essay, The Open Sore of a Continent, you question the whole concept of nationhood. Why are you questioning that now?
From the moment that nations on the African continent began really to call themselves independent nations and conscious of the history of those nations, that they were in fact artificial creations of European imperialist interests, countries. Sometimes even these countries were created by trading companies. And then the boundaries were approved, supported by military means or by negotiations with other predatory European nations who recognized as countries. And so when the Organization of African Unity came into existence, I was frankly, and stated it at the time, I was shocked by the fact that one of the, shall we say, founding principles of this organization was a respect, the sacrosanctity of colonially given boundaries. I found that personally humiliating and racially humiliating. Here you were before the Europeans came, you were different nations, you had different peoples, you had treaties between different nations, you had certain economic arrangements which operated within certain boundaries. Along come some interlopers who managed to conquer here, negotiate there, give you new entities which are not organic, which do not correspond to your history, do not correspond to your economic interactions, your cultural realities, your languages, even traditional religions. And then when you recover your racial integrity from these people, the first thing you do is to say that we hold these boundaries inviolable. So there's always been that sense of resentment. It's crept up in a number of essays and so on within Nigeria and on the African continent. But it was really when the military, the tyrants, took over and began spouting this language that it really became a daily a kind of negative bombardment. One was compelled to say, wait a minute, what is really at stake here? In whose interest are these boundaries? And then you look at the entire continent, you look at Sudan with this nearly 30-year-old war between the north and the south, and you ask, who has locked us in this mindless embrace? Why is it that we cannot sit down and really negotiate, go back and negotiate the truthful boundaries of our nationhoods?
Nigeria was one of the first African countries to get its independence from the colonial power that had ruled it. This was in 1960. It got its independence from England. Mm-hmm. Did you think that the future of the country would have a more kind of idealistic political shape to it? Did you?
Oh, absolutely. We were, we didn't think that all the task was done. What we saw, in fact, was the task to be done in the future. And we felt that we were up to it. We saw a vision of Nigeria, which extended even beyond Nigerian borders, all the way to South Africa, to Kenya, where the Mau Mau Liberation Movement was just, was still raging in terms of activities. We were conscious of the Portuguese, the brutal Portuguese colonialism in Mozambique, Angola, Guinea-Bissau. We're conscious of the dehumanization of Africans by the Belgians in the former Republic of Congo. And we saw our attainment of independence as a challenge. It was not just Nigeria we were going to rebuild. It was the entire African continent. And we're absolutely confident that we could do it.
Do you expect to be in exile for a long time?
When I left, I was pretty confident that there were enough forces of opposition within the military, the police, the trade unions, and the student bodies and the civic society, the professional organizations. I was confident that within a year we should see the exit of this dictator. But there have been so many sellouts in the ranks, many, many sellouts on many fronts. And so right now I am a little bit more careful about predicting to myself how long he'll be able to stay there. All I know is that every day efforts are being redoubled in all the various sectors I've mentioned, and that he'll go the way of all dictators sooner than later.
Thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Well, Shoyenka's new book is called The Open Sore of a Continent. Shoyenka's latest play, The Beatification of Area Boy, will be performed October 9th through 13th at the Brooklyn Academy of Music's Majestic Theater. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.